The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, the management, or the licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs, Connecticut. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, to be broadcast August 9th, 2023, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment. We should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, and Spotify. All right, we got a couple of, on the rant of the week, we've got a couple of unfortunates that are going on here, but you know, these things happen. Sad notes. First one, I'm going to comment on lost another big time advocate for cycling, so to speak. Paul Rubin, aka Pee-wee Herman, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Anyone remember that? Anyway, we'll move on that and go on to the next one. Also, protesters target polluting sponsors in halting the World Championship road race. This is rigged protesters working on to halt new oil and gas projects in the North Sea. See, Shell, Ineos, sponsorships of cycling, ironic. And we'll talk a little more about that in the show, but the most important one on here, very sad note, Magnus White. Magnus White, 17-year-old cyclist, mountain bicycle racer, and world champion, contender towards the world championships, which are going on right now. He was struck and hit by a car last week while training in Boulder, Colorado. And I'll talk a little bit more about that on the show. We'll talk a little bit more about Magnus. I saw him at Cross Nationals. He's an amazing rider, just amazing kid all around. But we'll talk about that more in the show. On a positive side, Saul Nesselroth. Yeah, there's a shout out to our friend Saul Nesselroth, who is our oldest member in our club. And happy 96th birthday to Saul Nesselroth. And yes, he did ride his bike to the party. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that we had a little celebration. All of our rides this weekend ended up at a place called the Red Barn in Mansfield, which has ice cream. And Saul, because he's Saul, ended up buying all of us ice cream for his birthday.
That's kind his
of a
tradition.
Kind of a neat thing. It's his tradition. And as I said to the owner of the Red Barn,
Renee,
I said, shout out to Renee. I said to Renee, we'll see you next year. Because, you know, it's going to be 97, so we'll come back. And, yeah, he rode his bike there. He's got a trike, which is kind of cool because it gives him the stability at 96 to be able to still get out and ride his bike. And he, I also helped him a while back rig up a little hub motor on it, too. So it's got e-bike capability, too. So when he gets to the hills, somebody said they rode with him in the Tour de Mansfield, and he he was killing him on the hills because he's got the little move. He's got the boost, so he can get up the hills better than people on traditional bicycles. Kind of cool. Hey, he's still at it. He's still riding. That's very cool. So the World Championships are going on. This is a big deal right now. It's still going on through the 13th, I think, of this month. We still have World Championships happening, and there is, just so you know, it is in Scotland this year, and the question is, who won the first Worlds, the first World Championships that took place at the Nuremberg in Germany? Okay, we'll get to that a little later on in the show. Let's see, what else have I got here? Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. This is something I was going to get to last week, but I kind of ran out of time. So I had another mechanical thing that I was doing, so we didn't get to it. I wanted to talk a little bit about quick links. Yeah, quick links. Quick links are, in my estimation, one of the best things that's happened as far as bike chains go. It's a pretty cool thing. And what it does is it allows you to be able to take your chain off and on pretty easily on your bike. And as Jim Langley from Bicycling Magazine says, it's one of the best technical developments recently that has been the most chain companies are now providing connecting links. They've become known as quick links. That's because they can be connected by hand, which makes them quick and easy compared to the days of old when you had to install and repair a chain by pushing and driving the pin out with a tight-fitting pin chain tool. And, you know, chain tools aren't terrible if you do it right, but there is there's a lot of room for error with a chain tool, which is why I'm not super big on Shimano. I don't know if they're still using the special link and that special pin and all. It's a bad idea. I've never really enjoyed it. I know a couple of people who have reported back to me and they've said they've broken quick links. I'm not sure how they've done that because I'm not sure it. Again, the mechanics of it are really, really good, and I really, really like the quick link. It makes it, as long as you have the right tool and as long as you do it correctly, same as with a pin tool, you shouldn't have any failure of your chain. But I do occasionally see riders that have broken chain problems, and I kind of wonder whether or not it might be operator error in the fact that maybe it wasn't put on right or whatever. It can happen. It can certainly happen. Hey, Chris, how you doing today? So, Anyway, that's one of those experiences I have never had. I've never broken a chain. In all the years I've been riding my bike, my chains have always functioned just fine. And even back in the days when I used to press them in myself, and, you know, you press it in, you get a little stiff link, but the chain tool is made with a little piece that makes it so you can release that tension a little bit, or you can simply just give it a side to side as far as grabbing onto the chain, and you can usually loosen it up pretty nicely. But with the quick link, you don't have to do any of that. And the beauty of that is that it's a great way to repair a broken chain if you're out on the road. So make sure that if you are carrying a spare link with you, that it is the one that matches your chain. And yes, you should have a spare link in your little seat bag, in your toolkit, to be able to repair your chain just in case, because you just never know. Again, I've never had it happen to me, but I have fixed other people's chains on the road because they happen to have the same 10-speed or 11-speed or 9-speed chain that I was riding, and I was able to get them back up and going again. So quick links are really nice. The other thing about the quick links, which is kind of cool, is that they allow you to take your chain off your bike and clean your chain and put it back on, should you be one to do that. I'm not a big advocate of that, but I think the more times you take your chain off and clean it, you're asking for, yeah, you're going to get a lot of grit out of there. You're definitely going to help out as far as that goes. But I think also especially if you're soaking the chain in some sort of solvent, you're also taking out some of the essential ingredients to the chain. And really, if you're going to do that, you really need to soak the chain completely in a lubricant before you put it back on. Seems like a lot of work to me. Besides, if you are on a road bike and you're going through chains at the level that I go through them, and that could be anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 miles, and you need a new chain anyway because it stretches out, you know, it's just kind of, it's overkill to constantly be taking your chain off and cleaning it, putting it back on. Little OCD. Anyway, it's, you know, some people like to have a really clean chain. I get it. I understand. Some people also like to use strange lubricants on their chains, which are not always, they're great for keeping your chain clean, but they're not always good as far as real lubrication. I'm experimenting with something right now, and I'll get back to all you guys about this in a few more weeks, because I am at this point sort of blown away by what I'm using. I've always been a T9 person. I've always used the Boschild T9 put out by Boeing Aircraft. I really like that stuff. It's a little oily for some people, a little messy for some people, but boy, it just keeps your chain nice and quiet. I've just found something that keeps my chain even quieter. I went into the local bike shop and I said, hey, I'm looking for some lube. You got any T9? And I was getting low, and I was pointed in the direction of this really unusual lube. And again, I will talk about it a little bit more. Maybe on the next show, I'll have a little more conversation about this. It's really weird. And the owner of the store was there, and he looked at me and he said, it's very, very strange. It sort of looks like, and please excuse this, but he's not wrong, it sort of looks like snot when you're putting it on the chain. It's kind of got this...
It's mucilaginous.
It's mucilaginous. There you go. I knew we had the correct answer for that. There you go,
Franny.
Well,
I don't know if it's really mucilaginous.
Well, I don't know. You'll have to take a look at it the next time I'm lubing your chain. But anyway, so it's an interesting lubrication. I kind of like it, but I don't take my chain off to lube my chain. I just kind of lube it on the bike, and I also clean it on the bike and that sort of thing. But I like the quick links. I like them a lot. If you are going to be doing install and cleaning of your chain and all that, or whatever, you really need a quick link tool. I particularly like, I have a Park tool that I use for that. Park makes all sorts of cool tools, and they have one that just fits right in there on the links, and you give it a squeeze and it pops the link open. Super easy. A lot easier than using a set of needle nose pliers, but you can also use a set of needle nose pliers to open them up. And when I close them up, I use a bigger set of pliers. So, well, anyway, there's a whole technique to it. You can usually find a YouTube video which will show you how to do it. But that Park MLP-1.2 Master Link plier is just an essential tool for your kit if you don't have it yet. It's a really, really nice thing. So I highly recommend that. So that's my quick link thing. Remember, all quick links are specific to particular chains. So, 8-speed, 9-speed, 10-speed, 11-speed, 12-speed, they all are different widths. So therefore, you need the specific quick link for that particular chain. And if you are... if you're getting yourself a new chain and you're going down to your local bike shop and you're purchasing a chain, I highly recommend that you also purchase a quick link or two as extras to keep in your seat bag. That's it. That's all I got on quick links. Kind of a cool thing. Love it. It's definitely a very, very useful piece of equipment. And if you don't have one in your seat bag, you should have one at least in your toolbox. It's a good thing. Okay, let's move on to a few things that I talked about earlier. And one was Pee-wee Herman. So if any of you are familiar with the Pee-wee's Big Adventure, the show started out with, the movie started out with Pee-wee Herman on a cruiser bike, and he's just smiling and pedaling down the road, and he's in the Tour de France, or a pseudo Tour de France, and he's just cooking along, and all these bike racers are trying to chase him down to the finish line, and they can't get there, and he's just riding along. It's all part of a fantasy, but anyway, it was an introduction to to a yet another movie with a bicycle in it. So we always are looking for movies with bicycles in them because it's a cool theme and it's a really cool thing. But so, as Pee-wee Herman said, he held a bike for $100 million trillion billion, but Pee-wee Herman's awesome red retro beach cruiser that co-starred with him in the 1985's Pee-wee's Big Adventure sold on eBay back in 2014. Just so you know, it fetched $36,600, not quite the sum that Herman insisted that he wouldn't even sell it for in the movie, but pretty good for a bike that the owner had listed on eBay. It said would come in pieces. Fortunately, everything is there. The listing continued, noting the buyer purchased it in 2010 for $10,000 and needed to sell it because the family was getting larger. $10,000 to $36,000. That's quite a little investment there. In case there's any question about being the real bike, the seller said it comes with an autographed photo of Herman actor Paul Rubens, a picture of him signing the photo, a certified authenticity, and Warner Brothers plans and spec sheet for the bike on red cargo boxes. The seller said he was the third owner of the bike. $36,000 for a beach cruiser. Pretty impressive. Okay, so I got a few more things I'm going to cover here before we go a little bit further, and I have a follow-up on the one rider to win the Tour de France without winning a stage. We talked about this previous week's episode. It was Greg LeMond, and I got a question from listener Art. Boy, I'm going to mess your name up, Art, so I'm just going to say Art R. I'll just leave it at that. And anyway, he sent a note back to me, and thank you for listening, by the way, Art. Did anyone win the Tour without winning a stage when Lance lost his wins? Good question. The answer is Lance who? Oh, yeah, slips my mind. Yeah, I kind of try to forget about that guy. Actually, no one gets the Tour de France titles that Lance Armstrong lost. Did you know that?
No.
I did not either. And so that brought me to, come on now. I got it right here.
Do we know who would have, though they didn't give it to him?
They didn't give it to them. They didn't give any of the second place. So here it is. This comes from an NPR article that was back on October 26th of 2012. I was not aware of this. Lance Armstrong in the yellow jersey during the 2022 Tour de France. 2002 Tour de France. Now there's no winner of that race or six others, which he finished first. He didn't really finish first. He cheated first.
Right.
Anyway,
well,
declaring that they have listened to the world's reaction to the Lance Armstrong affair, quote unquote, leaders of the international governing body for cycling today said that no one will be awarded the seven Tour de France titles that have been stripped from Armstrong's records because of the doping scandal surrounding the one-time superstar. The International Cycling Union, that's my good friends, the UCI, who I rant about a lot, management committee said it understands that a cloud of suspicion would remain hanging over this dark period, 1998 to 2005, but that while this might appear harsh for those who rode clean, they would understand there was little honor to be gained in reallocating places. The committee also called Armstrong and all other affected riders to return the prize money they had received.
Wow.
That's it. So there you have it. You wanted to know. That's what I got. I did a little research on it. Thank you for the question, Art, because it's always nice to know that A, somebody's listening out there. And also, it gave me information that I didn't know anything about. So it's really, really cool. I never really looked into it. I just assumed that the second place rider become the first place rider. But there was no ceremonies or anything. That's what piqued my curiosity on this and why I thought I would mention it today. Let's see here. We're going to go back to, I got to go back one more time here. And this is, come on now, where are you here? You are right here. No, wrong one. So, the next thing I'd like to talk about is I just want to talk a little bit about Magnus White. So, Magnus White, it's tragic, okay? Top American cyclist, Magnus White, 17, dies after being hit by a car. This was updated on July 31st, 2023. He's a 17-year-old on the U.S. national cycling team. He was killed the previous Saturday while cycling in Boulder. People need to learn how to say this correctly. He is seen here competing with the Cyclocross World Championships in January in the Netherlands. Okay. A rising star in American cycling, 17-year-old Magnus White has died after a driver hit him while he was cycling on the shoulder of a highway in his hometown in Boulder, Colorado. White had been preparing to head to Glasgow, Scotland to compete in the Junior Men's Mountain Bike Cross Country World Championships next week. A member of the USA Cycling's Junior Men's National Team, White won the 2021 USA Cyclocross Junior Men's National Championships. He represented the U.S. in his first Cyclocross World Championship last year in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and competed in his second earlier this year in the Netherlands. USA Cycling describes cyclocross as a combination of road cycling, mountain biking, and steeplechase. Our hearts are heavy as we mourn the tragic loss of our son, Magnus White, his parents, Michael and Jill White, said in a statement on Monday. Magnus was dedicated to his family and his friends and loved to surround them with laughter. He had an amazing smile that always lit up a room, bringing joy to those around him. While his passion for cycling started in age of 2 on a Strider bike. Yeah. Love it. Isn't that great? He began racing at age 8. He grew up in Boulder and trained with the Boulder Junior Cycling. He was also an avid skier and a committed student who aspired to attend business school, according to his website. He had planned to graduate from high school a semester early so he could focus on international competition in the spring of 2024. In addition to his parents, he's got a brother, Eero. And it's a terrible thing. There is a fund. There's a GoFundMe fund that has been set up by an organizer, Christine Lipson. Terrible, tragic, but let's get into this a little bit deeper. So here we go. He was riding on the shoulder of a highway, 119. What's the word here? State road. Okay. Not a big lover of state roads, even the ones with big shoulders. Here it is. Here's the reason why. A 23-year-old woman driving a Toyota Matrix crossed from the right-hand lane into the shoulder, striking White from behind before she crashed into a fence, according to the incident report from the Colorado State Patrol. White was transported to a hospital and pronounced dead. The car's driver was uninjured. Neither drugs, alcohol, nor excessive speed are suspected factors in the crash, according to the State Patrol.
What about texting?
Point made, Fran. Thank you so much for that comment. What about texting? What about the stupid cell phone? What about the fact that that and the car are both murder weapons? They're not good. You can't be looking at your phone when you're driving your car. Period. That's it. It's deadly. And it was, in this case, very deadly for Magnus White, an up-and-coming star in the cycling world. I feel very, very bad, and I feel so sad for his parents and family. It's really a terrible thing. Now is the time maybe now is the time to do something about this cell phone distracted driving problem that we have going on. You know, it has to at least have some sort of a homicide, whatever you want to call it, connection that's placed on the driver of the vehicle. The driver of the vehicle needs to be punished. And you know, wandering into the lane that is a breakdown lane for the car when the car was obviously not breaking down, it's just, we know what happened. We all know what happened. And this is where, and here is, and David C. Allen. Hi, David. Nice to hear it, see you there. And thank you so much for all your comments, by the way. We've been commenting back and forth in Messenger. And the Garmin radar, I'm with you, man. I am totally with you on that. And yes, I have spoken about it on past shows. And it is... it's a game changer. It's totally a game changer. And it's, you know, David even said to me on one of his comments that he's also taking to coming out into the road a little bit more. And that is also a game changer. When you're much more visible and you're out in the road a little bit more, cars will slow down from behind because you're in their way, so to speak. Or at least that's what they think. And it does slow them down. And then your radar, of course, is a wonderful thing because what it's going to do is it's going to alert you to a car coming up from behind, and then you're going to veer over. And that sends a silent message to the driver that you know they're there and that you're willing to get over a little bit to let them get by. It's a simple communication. It's really, really wonderful. So yeah, radar's key. You know, I hate the fact that I ride with radar and I have to ride with mirrors and all that stuff now, but you know what? I wouldn't go out without it anymore. That's it. I've got it on all the time. It's, again, a game changer. So we have talked about it in the past on the show, and I will continue to talk about it, I'm sure, in the future, because I just really think it's a good thing. And, you know, whether or not Magnus had something like that on his bike, he might not have. It's, you know, whatever. That part doesn't really matter. It just matters that we've lost a great up-and-coming cyclist and wonderful young man. So, the person who drove that car, I'm sure, is not super, super feeling real, real good right now. I wouldn't think so, anyway. So, very, very unfortunate. So, going back to, I had a question earlier in the show, and the question earlier in the show is, who was the first professional world, the first professional world cycling championship, who was it won by? Since it's, you know, world cycling championship time right now. And if you didn't know, it was Alfredo Binda from Italy. And Alfredo Binda, for you old school guys out there and gals that are out there, yeah, remember Binda toe straps? Binda extra toe straps? Any remembrance of those things? One of the finest toe straps ever, named after Alfredo Binda. Maybe he owned the company. I don't really know. I didn't do any research on that. But my Binda extra straps were so good. They were so good. I could cut the circulation off of my toes so easily by pulling those straps super tight. And they really didn't let go. The extras were the nicer ones. They had that little band in the inside. I digress. Anyway, I won't go there anymore. I use clipless pedals now. They're wonderful. They're right up there with bike radar. They're way, way up there. It's a really cool thing. So let's start with the worlds. Glasgow and across Scotland, the 3rd through the 13th, August of 2023. The elite road race. We're going to start with this. This was kind of interesting because, you know, whenever you have these big events, sometimes you have things that happen, and of course something did happen. So let me see if I can get this here. Here we go. So protesters targeted polluting sponsors in halting the World Championship road race. Absolutely. 23 hours ago, according to this, which of course is now a little bit longer, but anyway, it was yesterday at the World Championships. So what they were protesting was halting new oil and gas projects in the North Sea and Seashell Ineos sponsorship of cycling Ironic. Yeah, isn't that interesting? So it was stopped after 80 kilometers of racing for over 50 minutes on Sunday when protesters blocked the road. A breakaway of nine riders. A breakaway of nine riders had a lead of almost 8 minutes on the peloton and were on a narrow road on a climb in Denny County near Carron Valley Reservoir, 192 kilometers before the finish in Glasgow. They probably would have been caught, but that's beside the point. You never know. When they came across the blockage, four demonstrators from a group called This Is Rigid glued themselves to the road and chained themselves together across the ahead of the race, bringing both groups to a halt. Excellent. This may take a while, the organization admitted, as riders took the chance to have a nature break in the grassy verge or sit and stretch their legs. Nature break. I love how they say nature break.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's. I mean, I guess it's
a euphemism.
I guess it's a thing. I mean, you could call it a nature break.
It's a nice way to say it.
You know, it is. I guess it's better than I have to pee, right? I guess. Oh, well. Anyway, UCI President David Lempartient left the commissaire's car and walked back through the bunch with a concerned expression as the police worked to try and clear it away. The UCI issued a brief statement by way of social media, quote unquote, further to Police Scotland's confirmation of a protest in the Carron Valley area, which has temporarily interrupted the men's road race. We are working closely with all relevant authorities to minimize disruption to the race and also to ensure the safety of riders as our paramount concern. A Scottish environmental group called This Is Rigid confirmed to Cycling News that they had staged the protest. The group aims to stop the Scottish government from approving new fossil fuel projects in the country and create a transition fund for oil and gas workers. You know, what do I have to say about this? You know, I wish they hadn't done it at the Cycling World Championships, but it is sort of fitting because, you know, bicycles are the solution here. We've been talking about this for a long time. If we would just focus a little bit more of our efforts on infrastructure change and safe cycling, safe commuting, and development of cycling in general, we don't need the fossil fuels as much as we are using them now, and we don't need the future development of the fossil fuels. And that's the big question here. If you're going to spend all this money developing future fossil fuels, why? If we're already headed in the direction that's kind of trying to wean ourselves off of this, it doesn't seem right to have to go in that direction. But anyway, you know, it's what it is. It's all about money. It's all about power. I can't get in the middle of all this, but if I were king, everyone would ride a bike. So anyway, it's really unfortunate, and it did happen, and so on with the race. So let's go on with the race. Here we go. Are you ready? It was amazing. And I just lost my place here. That's just terrible. But that's all right. I can go back here and pick it up. So there was a breakaway towards the end, and in amongst that breakaway was Matthew Vanderpoel, was Wout Van Aert, was Tadej Pogacar. Vanderpoel made a launch, and when he made a launch, oh boy, look what happened. So Vanderpoel makes this amazing launch, and he accelerates away, and now he's on a solo shot, and as he's on the solo shot, he comes bearing down hard, rainy roads, wet roads, he comes bearing down hard, and he crashes his bike.
Oh.
He crashes hard, he breaks his shoe, okay, and he gets back up, like any good cyclocross racer would. He gets back up, hops back on his bike, and solos across the line all by himself. So the way it worked out. Vanderpool would not be denied. He had Tadej Pogačar chasing in after him, but Vanderpool would not be denied as he crossed the line, winning the race in dominant fashion by 1:37. Van Aert raced home for the silver medal, and Pogačar beat Pedersen, that was Mads Pedersen, in a sprint for the bronze medal. So very exciting, very cool stuff. The 28-year-old said he felt for a split second that he had squandered his chance at winning the title when he slipped and crashed. I was just flying around the course until the crash. I was not taking risks, and suddenly I was on the ground. It was super slippery sometimes, Vanderpool said. Now, this is a guy that really, really, really knows how to handle a bike and ride a bike, and yet, you know what? It can happen to anyone. You got to be careful in the wet. As I'm listening to the rain falling outside my window here right now.
Yeah.
And I chose not to ride my bicycle up to the community center this morning to teach my class because I don't like riding in the rain. I'll wimp out. I know. Call me wimp. Go ahead. Wimp. You can do it. Chris Page, are you out there listening? I know. You called me a wimp last week, too. Or slacker, I think.
I don't think that's wimp.
I think slacker is what I got last week from Chris. That's another story, another situation. So, Vanderpool launched with 27 kilometers to go, leaving the trio of champions behind him to battle out the remaining two places. 27K to go. This guy launches a solo. As we have seen in the past, Matthew Vanderpool can go from his standard, I'll give you his standard working wattage of 390 to 400 watts and launch out 1600 watts like there's no tomorrow. And when he does that, he's gone. That's it. I saw him do it in many races. It's really, really amazing. Good old Matthew Vanderpool. And so now he gets to wear the rainbow jersey all year. That's really cool. Very good. Big shout out there. I just caught some of the final footage on it, and that was it. But very, very cool stuff. So it's Matthew Vanderpool, Wout van Aert, Tadej Pogačar, Mads Pedersen, and Stefan Kung are the top five finishers in the men's elite road race. So cool stuff. No one there from the United States, for anybody who's interested in knowing that. We're just not up to that caliber at this time. At this time. I do remember when Greg LeMond won as a junior, though. So anyway, anything is possible. Anything is possible. But that's the word from the worlds right now. I would talk about the women's worlds, except I can't because it will be tomorrow, and that will be the day before this broadcast comes out live. So anyway, for what it's worth, I'll have more information on the women's race next week because the women's pro elite race is on Tuesday. So anyway, that's what I've got as far as the chatter on the world scene, and we've got some more stuff to talk about. I've got stuff in the bicycle industry news category. This is kind of interesting. So, you know, we're going through this whole bicycle boom thing that happened because of COVID. There was a big surge in bicycle sales and big shortage, and the shortage kind of fueled that. And here you go, folks. This was from July 25th. Shimano's bike-related sales down 18% in the second quarter. Okay, so what does that mean? That means that the demand for the product is backing off, and it continues a long-term trend that macroeconomic conditions and industry inventory levels contributed to a 17.7% decline in sales in its bicycle business in the second quarter of the year compared to the same period last year. Net sales of Shimano's bike-related business were 204,986 million yen. That's about 1.45 billion for those of you who aren't into your yen conversions. And in its first half, which ended in June 30th, operating income in the segment decreased 39.5% to 42,093 million yen. On a quarterly basis, second quarter sales were down 18.6% from the same period last year in the bike division, while operating income in the segment was down 7.5% in the quarter. Although the strong interest in bicycles cooled down as progress was made toward recovery to pre-COVID-19 day-to-day routines, interest in bicycles continued as a long-term trend, Shimano said. On the other hand, concerns about economic recession, including rapidly rising inflation, led to a slowdown in sales of completed bicycles, and market inventories generally remained high despite ongoing supply-demand adjustments. In North American market, sales remained weak and market inventories were at a consistently high level, the company said. So, yeah, that's what's going on right now. There's a lot of inventory out there right now. I am noting that one of our local bicycle shops here has a big quote-unquote sale going on because of an overabundance of inventory, and I think it's primarily from their supplier because so they can offer much better deals. If you're looking to buy a bike now,
get a new bike.
It's a good time. It's a real good time.
Should I get one?
Show me the money. So you can do whatever you want, Fran, but this is the time to do it. Apparently, this is what it's all about. So that's what's going on in the industry on that end of things. I've got a few other things going on here in the industry, which it goes back to e-bikes, of course. The industry is asking the Consumer Product Safety Commission for mandatory bicycle regulation, battery regulations. Yeah. We're starting to, like, notice that there are issues with rechargeable batteries in both bicycles and, yes, cars. Kia had a huge recall recently, a big announcement of some of their models, not our models, okay, by the way, just so you know, I did check into it. Some of their models, Kia was recommending to not park them indoors. In other words, don't put your car in the garage because it might start on fire and burn your house down. Isn't that nice?
No.
So anyway, as we've got two hybrid Kias sitting underneath our bedroom, it does make you a little nervous.
Yeah.
But we're not, because it's not our cars.
Okay.
It's not our cars. Kia's had a couple of other issues too. They got this problem with people stealing their cars, and because they're, like, super easy to break into and steal. Oh. Some of them, not all of them, not ours. Once again, I did check into all this just to be sure. But so they got a little bit of bad press happening right now. It's too bad, because we like our Kias. They're good. You know why I like my Kia? I like my Kia because I can put two bikes in the back of it, and I can lock them up, and I've got privacy glass, and nobody knows they're in there, and I can safely travel with them without having them on the outside of my vehicle, which I prefer. So anyway, when I go buy a car, by the way, this is very, very important, I always bring my bike with me. Because if you don't bring your bike with you when you buy the car, you won't know whether or not it's going to fit in the back, right? It's more important than anything else your bike fits in the back than it is that the car is what you're, you know. I'm not looking for, you know, a sexy sedan or anything like that.
And it also
anymore.
Sends a message to the car dealer.
I'm looking for a car that I can carry my bikes in. And it's got to carry not just my bike, but it's also got to carry Fran's bike.
Or a friend's bike.
And what's that?
A friend's bike.
Or a friend's bike. And, you know, I use a bike tight, so I take the front wheel off and I bolt the front fork down into the back of the car, and it's great. It's wonderful. Very stable, very nice, travels easy, No problem whatsoever. You can go to a hotel. You can park the car outside the hotel, hit the alarm on the car, not have to worry about security or losing your bike because you left it on a bike rack outside. I see it all the time when I go to these events. People pull into a hotel. They've got two bikes on the back. They've got them cabled onto their car. And it's like, it's a little risky depending on where your hotel is, but you know, you never know. Somebody could very easily, you know, go through the parking lot and pilfer your bike. But I like mine behind the glass. I think that's a better place for me rather than behind my car. So anyway, the feeling here is that mandatory federal regulations will be necessary to curb the growing fire danger from lithium-ion batteries. And this is, the industry representative said that a Consumer Product Safety Commission public hearing, they said this at a public hearing, nearly 4-hour hearing consisted of three panels of industry, independent standards groups, and consumer safety advocates. It's not lost on me that this is a broad group of experts, including industry, voluntary standards bodies are all calling on us to implement a mandatory standard, said Commissioner Richard L. Trumka Jr. In New York City this year, 87 injuries and 13 deaths have been attributed to lithium-ion battery fires, according to the Fire Department of New York Commissioner Laura Cavanaugh, who was the first panelist to address the commission. She said that micromobility use in the city dramatically multiplied during the pandemic. I also saw some pictures of, we'll call them tenement houses that the delivery people were living in. So we're talking about people that are financially challenged to begin with, and this is what they're doing for a living, is they're delivering, you know, food or packages or whatever they're doing around the city, and then they go back and they're living in these big tenement houses. And I mean, the unbelievable array of extension cords and wires that were being used to charge these bikes back up, it was criminal what was going on there. We need better places for people to be able to plug their bikes in. Gee, Tesla's done a pretty darn good job of doing it for cars, and why aren't we doing it for bicycles? Because bicycles, of course, are not nearly as important as the great American automobile. That's what we got. That's what we got going on. So the hearing touched on a variety of issues, including safety standards, including UL and EN standards. So representing the industry were Matt Moore of People for Bikes and Mike Fritz of the Human Powered Solutions, Chief Technology Officer, Jeff Jamboy of Trek Bicycles Electrical Compliance Engineer, and Heather Mason, our good friend Heather, of the National Bicycle Dealers Association, the president. So, yep, we got a problem. It's got to be taken care of. But we're not done yet, because I just went to the same site. That's not what I was trying to do. We're going to go back here, and nope, that's it. That's it. That's all I got. So anyway, that's really what we're looking for here, is we're looking for a little better standards as far as this goes. And it's just not, you know, this is a problem. When we get into any kind of new industry, you're going to see problems like this. So, you know, that's the way it works. Let's see, what else have I got going on here? I know I've got more stuff here. This comes from our good friends at Streets Blog. Love these guys. By the way, if you're not familiar with them, they are streetsblog.org. And it's a lot of advocacy for transportation item, pedestrians, cyclists, buses, you know, mobility other than cars and trucks. So it's kind of a cool site. I really like it. So this is a study. Most U.S. cyclists say they would move to cities that offered to buy them e-bikes. Isn't that interesting? So could the humble e-bike credit become a powerful economic development tool? That's a darn good question. So a whopping 6 in 10 cyclists would relocate to a city that offered them an incentive to buy an electric bicycle, according to a new e-bike industry survey. And the study authors say, policymakers would be wise to start thinking about taxpayer-supported rebates as a potential economic development tool, as well as a strategy to cut emissions, congestion, traffic violence, and more. We're doing this here in the state of Connecticut right now. It's kind of nice. Not only did we do it, we ran out of incentives within days, and now we've just put some more incentives out there. So these incentives can make the environment, the human body, and the wallet just a little more optimized. And that's from a data journalist, James Capigotto, who worked on the project. Americans want cost-effective commuting options and improved quality of life, which they can get from just being outside in the sunlight and the breeze on a bike. This quality of life thing, by the way, I'm starting to see in more and more and more of it from my son's generation on down. The youth of our country are just not interested in polluting the planet anymore. They're just not interested in the congestion and the mess that we've created. They want better quality of life, and it's not a bad thing.
And they don't want to work 60 hours a week.
And, well, think about it. They don't want to work 60 hours a week, and they don't want to then spend 2 hours a day in their car getting back and forth to work.
Right.
On top of that, it's senseless. It really is. I don't blame them. I think it's great. Back in the day, and I'll reflect on the long hair that's coming out from behind my back here, we felt the same way. Hello. You know, you go back to the 60s and 70s, and we were all complaining about the effect that industry was putting on our environment. By the way, just read a short article the other day that talked about the scientists from ExxonMobil. You know those guys, ExxonMobil? You ever hear of those guys? Remember the Valdez? Anyway, ExxonMobil, back in the 70s, were warning the corporate execs that we had a huge environmental problem developing with fossil fuels. Well, what do you know? They knew about it. So the tobacco industry knew that smoking cigarettes would kill you, right? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. The oil industry knew that oil and mining out all of these, all these natural resources, quote unquote, right, fossil fuels, would kill the planet. What happened to the tobacco industry? Seems like they lived in lawsuits for a very, very long time and still are living in lawsuits for a very, very long time. They were forced to give back lots of money, et cetera, and they were forced to clean up their act, basically, and stop advertising to children, et cetera. Hey, you lawyer friends out there, I know you're out there. I know you'd love to throw a big class action suit at the automobile companies and at the petroleum industry. Go for it. Here's your opportunity. They knew about it. They already knew about it back in the 70s. All right? What am I doing here? Anyway, I'm just ranting. Anyway, even more respondents were fans of a federal credit that would help them purchase an e-bike anywhere they choose to live, with 70% supporting the recently reintroduced e-bike act. Only a small handful, 20% of the respondents, were aware of the details outlined in the newest version of this legislation, which would provide a refundable tax credit to 30% of the purchase price of a new pedal-assisted bicycle priced under $8,000 with a maximum credit of $1,500. Yay! Good thing, right? You want to rebuild your cities? here you go. You know, this is a big shout out to my friend Luke in Hartford. I know he's leaving. I'm sad. Sad you're leaving, Luke. But this was the answer right here. This is it. You want to rebuild your city. You want to take your city, which is having obvious, you know, always had financial crisis, probably because you can't collect taxes from the state offices, but we won't get into that. This is how you do it. This is how you lure the people back into the city. You lure them back in by showing them that they can transport themselves to their jobs on bicycles on safe streets. This is a no-brainer, folks, an absolute no-brainer. This is why Bicycle Talk exists. I'm here to try to promote this, to try to encourage you and get you out there and pay attention to this. At this point, though, now we have to stop because we're going to have to move on. And we'll talk about it more next week, won't we? Another thing that we'll talk about next week, let's just move on here to events. We've got ongoing the bicycle game on the early history of bicycles in Hartford. That's still going on at the state capital, so you might want to check that out. August 19th, we've got the Steeplechase Bicycle Tour. That is coming up, and we'll probably have a little bit more discussion on that in coming weeks. And next week, if Billy is out there still listening, Billy and I are going to try to put together a podcast and radio show, and it's going to be Billy and Ron Heart to Heart. That's the plan. We're going to try to bring Billy into the studio here. Yeah, the bedroom. And we will we'll talk a little bit about both of our big, exciting adventures over the last 2 years with our hearts and heart disease, and also the fact that we're both out riding our bikes now. So kind of a cool show. Hopefully you'll be able to attend that. That is coming up. Remember, the 78th edition of the Vuelta a España takes place in Barcelona on August 26th, coming real soon. We've still got some world championship stuff going on right now. And Saturday, September 30th in Charter Oak Park in Manchester, Connecticut, Rotary in Motion. It's a free event that has bicycle things going on. Finishing points. Cell phones in cars, killing cyclists. Can't stand it, folks. I can't stand it. Stay off the state highways. They're straight. They're fast. They give you a huge shoulder. They're not safe because people drive with their knees and don't watch where they're going. Let me introduce you, my friend, the back road with twists and turns and stone walls and maple trees and oak trees and pine trees and all sorts of distractions that will take out that nasty vehicle in a second if they're not paying attention. Be safe, please. Really, really, really. So I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Join the revolution of change. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride your bike, and ride your bike to work one day a week, or use your bike for transportation one day a week. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, the management, or the licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
Hi.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, you can leave a comment down here below. You can also send me an email if you're listening to this on audio file to bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. Bless you, Fran. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. If you want to contribute information, drop me an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. We'll talk about that next week. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening. See you next week.